Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, we've moved from all pandemic all the time to the police defund or reform issue, and now it is all Black Lives Matter in all aspects of the arts, and the theater community once again has stepped up big time. It's hard to even know where to begin with this. Artists demanding more diversity on and behind the stages, and now the theater companies themselves are demanding what they call budget justice, which I briefly mentioned last week, and it has now come into full bloom. Now, here is one sample of many that I received this week, this one from the Classic Stage Company, which wrote, under the mayor's current proposed budget, funding for the Department of Cultural Affairs would decrease 35% from last year. Other areas seeing substantial cuts include the Department of Education and the complete elimination of the city's youth employment program. In the wake of COVID-19 and continual demonstrations of police brutality, we believe the current proposed budget does not fairly reflect the values of our city, which has always placed our sense of community in the foreground. Our city's executive budget must also reflect this ideal. As New Yorkers, we are slowly entering a phase of recovery as the after effects from the global pandemic begin to ease. However, we also must begin a period of recovery from the structural racism plaguing our neighborhoods and reinvest in our cultural programs. Okay, and then there was, or is, the Public Theater's call for response and action. And they wrote, dismantling systemic racism and ending the violence, inequities, and pain it continues to inflict on the Black community requires reflection, transformation, and action, not only from institutions, but also from each of us. The public is committed to working diligently and thoughtfully to address systemic racism within our organization. In parallel, as we do the hard work internally, we know our voice can support widespread change in our own city right now. Well, and that's the Public Theater, mind you, which few have ever accused of not offering progressive works in all shades. These companies are asking supporters to write or call or text their representatives or the mayor's office specifically to ask for a fairer budget, one that does not shortchange those who create, the second responders, as playwright Lynn Nottage calls them. It is the arts, let's face it, which bring people from all over the world to the city, filling its streets, its performance spaces, and its coffers. Okay, and then there is the material being offered by almost all these spaces at the moment of self-reflection. The Mint Theater, which finds and produces old plays long forgotten or never even seen in this country. It's one of my favorite companies, as you know by now. Well, it's pledging, at least for now, to send out a regular newsletter highlighting and telling the stories of Black writers. First up, one Evalalee Spence, a member of the Harlem Renaissance, who apparently wrote some 14 plays. Reading her personal story alone is mesmerizing. Something called Frigid New York, a theater on the Lower East Side, is presenting a weekly production called The Reparations Now Show. The first one up is Friday at 8 o'clock. And then there is Molière in the Park, based in Brooklyn, which will present a live streaming of Tartuffe Saturday at 2 and 7 o'clock. This is notable as it stars Raul Esparza. I think I'll be there. There are other things to look for as well. Check out the Vineyard Theater's weekly conversation on Tuesday at 5 o'clock with writer Cornelius Eady and actor Joe Morton. They'll discuss Edie's play, Brutal Imagination, about, well, what else? Racial injustice. Tonight, the Red Bull Company continues its podversation series with the always delightful actress Kate Burton. Pretty much all of these can be viewed later on YouTube or through the company's Facebook pages and so on. Now, Lincoln Center for the next 2 weeks is streaming free its production of a few years back of Act One, starring Tony Shalhoub and Santino Fontana. Now, I did not love this production, to be honest, when I saw it, but it should be perfect for streaming since it's a faithful adaptation of Moss Hart's terrific autobiography, and so the words almost matter more than the visuals. And on the subject of just the words, Los Angeles Theater Works, which I've mentioned here many times, they've been doing radio plays for decades, and now it is offering 6 new ones this week for your listening pleasure. Yes, all written by Black playwrights. And these shows include The Mountaintop and Stickfly, both which played on Broadway for short runs. And continuing on the audio-only front, the Public Theater, we know, canceled its Shakespeare in the Park summer series, but now it has decided to do it for our listening pleasure. So imagine strolling through Central Park with your earphones on, listening to one of my favorite actors, Andre Holland, as Richard II, alongside the great Felicia Rashad and others. So keep an eye, or I should say ear, out for exact times, but I believe it begins the second week of July. And speaking of Felicia Rashad, she is one of the members of a new coalition called Black Theater United, alongside Audra McDonald, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Billy Porter, Wendell Pierce, Norm Lewis, and others. The goal is instituting mentorship programs and other things to influence that systemic racism in their community. Now, they're not the first or only such coalition that has sprung up. A few others have, and they're more radical, frankly. But hopefully they will all get along and maybe even join forces, which are good words to live by these days, Jill, joining forces and getting along.
Yes, and I am waiting with interest while as this shifts into joining forces and getting along, having lived long enough to have been through periods of disruption and real social ruction in the past. Yep. And, you know, I find it fascinating how certain things are presented as though they've never happened before.
Yeah, I understand. I'm not
grasping that, because in a funny way, funny, not ha-ha, it seems to assume just a lack of
respect.
Exactly. Yeah, it implies a lack of respect for everybody who busted their butts to get, you know, nothing here is saying it's perfect. Nothing here is saying where it needs to be. But there is history that actually should be utilized, not, you know, there's a great line, history begins at the point in time most convenient to the argument. Mm-hmm. And I see that being, in my view, abused here.
Yeah, well, I don't know. This feels, you know, it's easy for me to say, look, I went through the 60s and all that too. This feels different. You know, maybe we said it then. And I'm not just talking about because they're tearing Teddy Roosevelt down from the Natural History Museum. I mean, this feels, at least with what's happening in the arts and certainly the theater community, does feel like, well, we'll see. We'll see when the other thing ends and they go back on stages, and we'll see how it's reflected. It's certainly being reflected right now and what they're offering during this time. But, of course, we have short memories in this country. That's something else we've learned from history.
One of the things that I found that's tangential but that really struck me, and I don't know if you remember this, because, again, you have to be of un âge certain, all right? Mm-hmm. And this is a bit from Sunday, May 24th, and I'm sure it was carried for. And the head is Rhody McCoy, 97, educator who started New York City's school wars, is dead. And I don't know if you remember, because it was, he died in California. He was 97. But in the late 60s, by the late 60s, most students in the city's public schools, New York City, were Black or Hispanic, and a vast majority of teachers and supervisors were white. An experiment in community control in 3 districts, basically it became known as the New York City School Wars, because he transferred white teachers and,
I don't know that name. When did he die? Did he just die?
He just died.
And where did he die?
He died in Palm Desert, California.
I think I did read that the other day.
He was 97, but what I'm saying, and his time was 50 years ago, which puts him in his mid-40s, which brings me to the other bit, is that what I'm really looking forward to and what I'm encouraging, I'm delighted with the number of kids, even here, especially here, high school and college setting up peaceful protests for their towns. And now what I want to see from all of this lot, not now right this second, but in due course, but not so long from now, I want to see them getting into politics. I want to see someone running for dog catcher.
Absolutely.
I want to hear much less about, you know, the horrors that are being visited upon. You know, it's like, yes, that's...
Absolutely. They're taking voter registration deaths, I hope, out to every one of these protests and getting them to register, if they're not already.
Yes, but then the thing becomes, and unfortunately we are dealing with a generation that, I learned this the hard way, back in the day where there were fundraisers, you know, the minute that you started, not GoFundMes, but asking people to RSVP to an event, very easy to RSVP to an event on a social media platform. Very easy to show up for a protest on a social media platform.
Yeah,
but actually showing up to do the deed or to is, percentages are pretty poor.
I agree. I just Zoomed with a woman who met our group, political group. God, I'm blanking on the name of their group. But what they do, I think it's called Square One. I think I'm right. And what they do is they go around the country and seek out young people or activists who they feel should run for office. And they help groom them and they support them. That's important. They're getting people elected. I mean, you get these people, that's great that they're on the streets, but next step, get them off the streets and into office, you know.
And you have to get them into office all along the spectrum, and I do not mean the autism spectrum.
Yeah, of course.
So, yes, and again, this is not, it's not cool to be a little bit left of center. It's only cool right now, it appears, just the way coverage goes, to be a very progressive activist bordering on, you know, willing to firebomb something.
Yeah, and
there's
this moment, if you're not white, it actually helps you. You see what's going on in Kentucky, where the candidate Amy McGrath was in front to win the primary to take on Mitch McConnell, but suddenly a wonderful black man, actually, of course, has come up and he's catching this moment and now is challenging her. This is neither good nor bad. It's obviously bad for her, but it just shows that these people, they're running. They're getting off the streets. And if they're doing that, they're going to catch this moment.
But there are a lot of people, again, in politics. And you don't notice this reflecting, but many of, just for example, these police departments are run by, you know, there's far more penetration, shall we say. There's far more... There are far more people, and again, when I say this, it's not enough, but do the research, check your history, value those who have come before, and see if you can build on the path that they blazed, is the essence. I saw a school fundraising letter the other day that, was basically blamed both the pandemic and racial justice for their fundraising needs. I was like, okay.
Listen, you're absolutely right. History is big. As we always tell our millennial kids, everything you're doing is great, blah, 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 but let me tell you, our music was better. And that's the bottom line.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.